Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, Legion of Audience. This is James. And before we get started today, I wanted to take a second and let you all know about the brand new Who Would Win Patreon. If you'd like to support the show and get behind the scenes access like you've never seen before, go to patreon.com/whowouldwinshow right now. Who Would Win patrons will have access to outtake videos, early info on battles, and even get a vote on characters that we'll use in upcoming episodes. So if you'd like to support me and the show, head to patreon.com/whowouldwinshow, and for as little as $5 a month, you can define yourself as more than just a fan. You'll be an official member of the Legion. Hope to see you there.
Standing in front of her full-length mirror, Enchantress prepares herself for the evening. "I don't know why I bother," she thinks out loud. "I could dress like a basket of rotten fruit, and the men would throw themselves at me all night long." Unabated, though, she continues to get ready. It is then that she notices a shadowy figure in that same mirror standing in the back of her room. As the Candyman flashes his hand blade and tilts his head slightly to the side. "Ugh," Enchantress mutters to herself. "This is not how I take my gentleman callers. Now, be a little lamb and remove yourself from my presence." When he fails to move, Enchantress sparks a spell that lights up her hand and says, "There will be no more warnings," as she prepares to degrade herself with battle. It's the sweet versus the sour. It's Daniel versus Amora. It's Candyman versus the Enchantress. Today on Who Would Win?
And welcome to another episode of Who Would Win, a show that completely ignores anything important happening in the world and instead focuses on a fictional battle between two characters from the worlds of comics, sci-fi, and fantasy. I'm your host, James Gavsey, and as always, I'm joined by the one and only Ray Stikanis. In today's episode, we have an epic matchup of a supernatural killer versus an Asgardian supervillain. In one corner, you have the Candyman, a vengeful spirit or demon or some type of supernatural being summoned by saying his name five times in a mirror, who represents the haunting consequences of societal injustices. And in the other corner, you have the Enchantress, a powerful Asgardian sorceress known for her beauty, mastery of magic, and ability to manipulate allies and enemies alike in pursuit of her own desires. Yeah, I wrote it. It's true. As usual, I did the patented Who Would Win Google test just to see how many times this matchup has been discussed. And this matchup has never been discussed before in the history of the internet. I'm telling you, I looked everywhere, couldn't find it. I even asked people to look for me. Nothing. Went to ChatGPT. ChatGPT was like, "I can't see a thing." Never, ever, ever. All I'm trying to say is, yet again, the Who Would Win show brings you, the Legion of Audience, our fan base, another premier geek culture matchup, and you are welcome. Ray, I gotta know, what do you think of today's matchup?
You know, I myself went to ChatGPT looking for some results, and all it wanted to give me was recipes for cooking pasta and gasoline. So maybe AI isn't the lifesaver that we thought it was going to be. That being said, obviously there's a very specific reason why would be using Candyman in this episode. You might say, this isn't Shocktober. It is not, but obviously Tony Todd's passing, we wanted to bring we've been thinking about him forever anyway, and this is just a fitting tribute to him. And on the other side, the Enchantress is a character I've been wanting to get on the show actually for a couple of years now. We have a giant list, you people. There is a giant list of new characters that we want to try to get on the show at some point. And it seemed like we're talking to ethereal, magical beings. Let's see how this thing plays out. It's a very unique contrast of styles, I'll say that. And those are the type of battles that get me the most excited.
This is definitely what I call a who would win style matchup. It's so out of the box, but again, somehow it kind of works. Look, to pull back the curtain, we had this amazing judge lineup for today's episode. But then when the production team decided to treat us all to lunch earlier today, and then they asked what we wanted, Ray Stakanis had to jump in front of everybody and shout, "Burger King, Burger King." He shouted it like five times really fast. And somehow
I was trying to summon it. Yeah, like Candyman.
I know exactly. But, our old judge disappeared and a new judge was summoned from out of nowhere. So I guess we're going with him. Making another appearance on the Who Would Win show. It's podcaster extraordinaire. It's fan favorite judge. It's tea party expert. Oh, yeah. You know what I'm talking about. It's Robert Clark Chan. Robert, welcome back to Who Would Win.
You mean like the tea party from, what was it, the 2000s? The right-wing proto Proud Boy thing?
Yeah, yeah, you're an expert on all that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah. I'm going to put that on my resume. I had forgotten about it. And like many things, just slap it on there. Let the hiring folks do the research.
You know what, Robert? This is just like another accolade, a feather in your cap. Look, you've been called the Shakespeare of Taco Bell. You piloted both the Red and Black Lions to form the most powerful version of Voltron Sesame Street has ever seen. And to make things even more incredible, your charm and psychotic way of thinking have won you both the Nobel Peace Prize and, more importantly, the treat of the week at Wendy's. You are a true Renaissance man. So putting that on your resume sounds good. It's not even your top 100 things that you've accomplished, because you are just absolutely spectacular, is all I'm trying to say. In the meantime, tell the Legion of Audience, our faithful fan base, what you've been up to.
I've been doing it all. By which I mean none of the things. Or all of the things. You know what? I am an agent of chaos. I always have been. And of course, the Tea Party reference is a reference to the Punisher versus Care Bears episode.
No, Deathstroke versus Care Bears. How dare you?
What's the difference? Which one? As a guy with
Agent
a bunch of
chaos,
guns,
ladies
who's
and gentlemen, there he is.
Anti-hero.
He's
no, I don't care.
You see, to quote my favorite Mad Max scene, that's bait.
I use that gif more than anything. Mm-hmm. Enchantress and Candyman. I have not seen Candyman. I have not.
Really?
I've only run across Enchantress a couple times, so I don't have a lot to bring into this. So it's going to be a toss-up. We'll see how this all shakes out.
You know, when you aren't familiar with the characters, I get a little scared.
Should be.
This has happened before, right? And you come up with something so, is the word amazing? No. Incredible? No. Insane? Yes. And somehow everyone goes with it, or somehow no one goes with it. I don't know what's going to happen. It's a crazy matchup with an even crazier judge, which is why I love the Who Would Win show. All right, look, with all that being said, let's just do it. Ray, please do us the honors and announce today's matchup.
I'm not going to lie, James. You got me at the Shakespeare of Taco Bell. That was pretty good. I hate giving you credit for
it's an important title, right?
That one got me. All right. Representing horror cinema, the entity that makes the world taste good, if you like the taste of bees, Candyman. And representing Marvel Comics, the magic user who loves a Friday night fish fry, it's really Sam Enchanted Evening, the Enchantress.
Dinner and a show, Ray?
I bring it all. I went to a theatrical production of something called Waiting for Godot this last week, and it really reminds me of how exciting it is to be up on the stage singing like nobody's watching. But it turns out they're actually watching and judging you very harshly.
Who's waiting for Gal Gadot?
Like most people, quite honestly.
That's fair. That's probably true. All right, well done. Right now, before we go any further, let's go over the basics of a Who Would Win match. Now, each debater will make 3 points. Keep in mind that the Who Would Win match is a random encounter in a neutral location with no prior knowledge or prep time allowed, and the debater has to stay within the confines of the character. And when it comes to determining the winner, it's the judge who has the final say and will determine which character lost based on death, incapacitation, or battlefield removal with no outside interference being allowed. Remember, you can always check out all of the rules on our website at www.whowouldwinshow.tv. And before we get started, don't forget to leave the Who Would Win Show a 5-star rating and a fantastic written review wherever you download and listen to podcasts. And now, let's get to the tale of the tape for both of our combatants. Ray, please give us the details for the Enchantress.
The Enchantress is a powerful Asgardian sorcerer in the pages of Marvel Comics. She was created by Jack Kirby and Stan Lee and first appeared in Journey into Mystery number 103 way back in 1964. Originally sent by Odin to get rid of Jane Foster, Enchantress moved past a life of being obsessed with, then trying to kill Thor, lather, rinse, repeat. She was exiled down to Earth where she joined Baron Zemo's Master of Evil group. Sultry and sexy, Enchantress is not one to typically engage with fisticuffs herself. Rather, she mesmerizes and controls men to do the fighting for her. She often teams up with other supervillains where they take the brunt of the combat, and she can use her high-level magical abilities to turn the tide of battle. Fun fact, we all know that the Marvel Asgardian characters are pretty much based on Norse mythology. I mean, look, we got Odin, Thor, Loki, etc. But did you know that Amora, the Enchantress, is one Asgardian character who is not? Now, Marvel has later claimed to have her be Norse characters Freya, Gefn, Iduna. However, some of those characters exist on their own in Marvel outside of the Enchantress character. I smell retconning here in a big way. In that, though, does that not make Amora very much her own self-actualized self? As she does not have the mythos to find her character before her? I think that is pretty cool. And that is the Enchantress.
I like how you use self-actualized self.
I'm a master words poop smith.
Yeah, I don't know where that started and where that finished. This isn't crazy.
Time is a flat circle, James.
Here are the important details for Candyman. Now, Candyman, a haunting, tragic figure brought to life in the 1992 film Candyman and was portrayed brilliantly by the recently deceased, and I'm sorry to say it, recently deceased, Tony Todd. Absolutely brilliant actor, by the way. The film itself was based on Clive Barker's short story called The Forbidden. Candyman made his first cinematic appearance in the film directed by Bernard Rose, and Candyman, once Daniel Robitaille, was an artist and the son of a former enslaved man in the late 19th century. After falling in love with a white woman and fathering a child with her, he suffered a brutal, racially motivated death that left him filled with rage and a longing for vengeance. His spirit, summoned by saying his name 5 times into a mirror, is tied to Cabrini Green, an impoverished neighborhood in Chicago, where he appears as a spectral figure with a hook for a hand and bees swarming around him. Candyman serves as a chilling reminder of generational trauma, racial horror, and the power of storytelling as a means of remembering painful histories. And here's an interesting fact about Tony Todd, the iconic actor who portrayed Candyman so epically. Did you know that I got to interview him for one of his movie roles? It's true. Years ago, Tony Todd appeared in the movie Hellfest, and I was invited to do an interview with him and some of the other actors from that movie as well. And after the interview, I had a quick minute to talk to him. Now, of course, I was a massive fan of many of his roles, but there was one role that he nailed so perfectly that I had no choice but to compliment him on how well he did it. In fact, he was the first person to ever voice this character in animation, and he was kind of surprised that out of everything he did, this is what I complimented him. And can you guess which character I'm talking about? Ray, can you figure this out?
No.
Okay, good. Here's a hint. They appeared in the Young Justice animated series. So yeah, you may not have noticed, but Tony Todd voiced the character known as Icon. It's one of my favorite characters from DC Comics. And if you don't know who he is, you got to look him up. And you'll see exactly why Tony Todd was perfect for that role and why I think a younger Tony Todd would have been perfect portraying him in live action. And now you have the facts on both opponents. Robert, do you have any questions before we get started?
I noticed that Candyman, you got to say his name 5 times to be summoned. Beetlejuice is only 3 times, which, I mean, says to me that a black man's got to work twice as hard as a white man or even in the afterlife. And that's sad, but, you know, that's the world we live in.
These are some interesting social commentary you're throwing our way here. All right, Ray, let's get this party started. Hit us with your point number one.
I love that you want to pretend like Candyman itself as a property is not social commentary.
There's so much social commentary.
folks at home who might not know any better, I'm going to go ahead and be real with you for a second. Candyman is social commentary. Surprise! Anyway, watch that movie. It's fantastic. Point number one for the Enchantress. Let's just talk about the fact that she's an Asgardian. She is an Asgardian at the end of the day, which means that she has superhuman physical abilities. You know, one thing I know about Candyman is he's attacking people on the streets of what, Chicago? He's not attacking people on the streets of Asgard. He is not attacking superhuman individuals. That's going to put him at a disadvantage, as in his world, people don't have superpowers except for him. That makes him, by default, the most powerful character that he can possibly be. But the Enchantress, at the other hand, is an Asgardian. So her strength is base level. She can lift 25 tons. 25 tons, that's like 4,000 pounds or something. It's a lot of pounds. I can't do math. But the point is, what does this mean? It means that one time She-Hulk tried to grab her on the shoulder from behind, and She-Hulk got backhanded across an entire room and did a little tumble. Why? Because Enchantress is super strong. Enchantress grabbed Typhoid Mary and tossed her about 20 yards into the snow before. Now, keep it real. She does not prefer to touch people. Enchantress does not. She does not like to get into the vulgar necessity of combat unless she absolutely has to. Touching other people is not something she does unless she wants to. And in combat sense, she does not want to. But Candyman is used to going against regular people, not gods. And I think that makes a huge difference here. Talking about a little bit of the speed, I'll get into that physical thing later. Talking about the speed, she has natural Asgardian speed, which means that she can dodge attacks from some of the fastest, most powerful creatures in all of Marvel. She's dodged attacks from Ultron, from Hercules, Black Widow, Wonder Man, and Sif. Sif, of course, being Thor's wife. Get her after that. Durability. She's tanked hits from Wonder Man. She's tanked hits from Sunspot, from Ghost Rider. And she often speeds out of the way of an attack and then leaves an illusion behind of her own death. That is the thing that's absolutely going to trick Candyman, who's not used to going against somebody who's powered, right? If he goes to do one of his many attacks and then he thinks he's got a kill, he's going to let his guard down and he's going to be hit with something, whether that be a battlefield removal something, a super damaging something, I don't know. But many times, until he figures it out, she's going to make him think that he has won, putting him at a back foot kind of an attack. Some magic as well. She uses the magic of seduction. She has a magical kiss that can, like, love-o-mancy? I don't know what you call it exactly, but she's turned the Black Knight, Wonder Man, Vision, and the freaking Hulk. She has made the Hulk fall in love with her with a kiss. That is a powerful character as well. Also, she can fly, obviously, and she can use telekinesis at a high level. She's picked up characters like The Thing and then ragdolled them around a room, but she also is known for taking large objects like billboards, you know, pieces of building, vehicles, and dropping them on the heads of her opponents. I think Candyman is a fantastic property, but he's not ready for all this smoke, quite frankly, at the end of the day, and that's my point number one.
All right, look, I'm going to say something that not a lot of people want to hear, but the Enchantress is not like this physical epitome of greatness from Asgard. She rarely works out. She doesn't exercise a whole lot. She's got physical beauty, of course, but it's kind of magically there, kind of gifted to her. She's kind of privileged, if you know what I'm saying. She doesn't earn anything she's got, and as a result, hasn't refined a method really to fight back, and doesn't like to get her hands dirty in a fight. Ray, you said it perfectly. On top of that, you know, Ray, first of all, the people of Chicago are actually super powerful. They're kind of like the Asgardians of Illinois. So I think that's kind of a push. Just putting that out there. Shout out to people of Chicago who are awesome. Again, She-Hulk, you know, she did get hit, backhanded down. She fell down, but then she got right back up. That was a panel from Secret Wars back in the 80s. And even She-Hulk said, hey, I was taking it easy on you. You gave me a nice little backhand. Hey, here's a really quick one-punch shot KO of Enchantress, which she did, which is pretty cool. And her love magic doesn't work on beings, and especially guys. who have a mission, who are strong-willed, who are kind of like intensely focused on one thing and accomplishing that one thing. I wonder if Candyman's kind of like that. Oh, that's right. He is. Let me get to my point number one real quick. And let's just dive into my point number one. Let's just dive into Candyman's terrifying, I don't know what you want to call it, bag of tricks and powers. Okay, here's a breakdown of his abilities, Candyman style, from his ghostly feats or demonic feats to full-on nightmare fuel. So he's also got superhuman strength. He's got brute strength that's out of this world. He can fling victims through walls, smash obstacles with a flick of his wrist, and pretty much turn any room into a disaster zone if he wants to. He's really kind of a crazy powerhouse, and trust me, you don't want to be on the receiving end of a Candyman throw. Now, unlike the Marvel Universe, where they say this person has class 20 or 100 strength, where they can lift 100 tons, or they can lift 25 tons, I don't quite know. If I had to say who's stronger, I might edge it to the Enchantress, but in terms of who's going to push their strength to the higher limits because they're insane like that, it's definitely going to be Candyman. Now, on top of that, let's talk about his invincibility, because, you know, he doesn't really feel pain the same way, you know, humans do. He shrugs off injuries like they're nothing. He's almost got this invincible resistance to harm. It's only when he's kind of found that ideal, you know, that woman who he thought kind of envisions, that wife he had back when he was alive. Other than that, you know, nothing's really going to harm him. He's been hooked, slashed, and more. He just keeps coming. One scene, a desperate character tries to injure Candyman with a weapon, and they strike him with it. He doesn't even flinch. He just calmly looks down at the wound, only watch it heal as if it never happened. If anyone tries to hurt him, it's like punching air. So good luck with that. He's also got superhuman speed. So if you blink, you're going to miss him. Candyman can move at speeds that make him nearly impossible to escape from him, whether you're running away or hiding. He's just right there before you can even react. He's the epitome of the you can run, but you can't hide horror trope, as Race to Canis likes to bring up. And he's always a step ahead of you because that's just what his demonic power allows him to do. Of course, he's got the power of teleportation and wall phasing. You know, this is kind of like the ultimate surprise element that he can do. And he doesn't just chase. He appears where he wants, when he wants. If you need to escape by ducking to another room, sorry, he's already there facing through walls like a ghostly nightmare. Distance and barriers mean nothing to him. Of course, he's immortal. You know, I wouldn't really call him immortal, but he's just always there, always as powerful as ever in his demonic form. Truly ageless. And again, just a scary type of guy. He's got this regenerative healing factor I mentioned before. In one memorable scene after 10 struggle, someone managed actually to injure Candyman. They create this large deep cut, and before their eyes, the wound closes up instantly as if his skin is weaving itself back together, erasing any sign of harm. This is really cool. He's got the power of levitation. You know, if you need to look up, Candyman's going to be right there. He can levitate. He floats effortlessly through the air in a way that adds a whole new level of creepiness to him. You could be looking up thinking you're safe, and then there he is, just hovering out of reach. And one fun scene, a character tries to hide by climbing up high, thinking Candyman can't follow, and he just simply floats up, silently rising to meet them as if gravity has no claim on him. I don't know how to describe it. By the way, he may be able to actually, more than just levitate, he may actually be able to fly. That's questionable, but I can't take it off the table just yet. He's got telekinesis, so move over, Jedi, because he's got this mind control over objects. I saw it. He can manipulate, immobilize, even throw things without touching them. A swing of his hook can knock down things from across the room, making it feel like the whole place is alive with his energy. And of course, he's got the power of invisibility. That's that ghostly demonic form. It renders him unseen, allows him to stalk his victims right under their noses. They're not going to even see him, where he's coming from. Could Enchantress detect him? Sure, but would it be too late? Yeah, I think so. Look, Candyman doesn't just haunt people. He actually physically manifests to this physical form and just wrecks them, absolutely tears them apart. And that's something he could do to the Enchantress. All of that is my point number one.
All right, there's plenty of things to push back on over here. You know who else doesn't work out despite their natural gifts, James Gavsey? Superman! When was the last time you saw Superman pumping iron in the gym? You know why he doesn't do it? Because he doesn't have to. And you talk about people who are one-dimensional, not, you know, being immune to her wiles. My understanding is Hulk smashes things. That is pretty one-dimensional as far as I'm concerned. And Hulk has been taken in by her abilities. And I love that you use the word levitate, because levitate is flight for people who can't fly, right? And you try to argue it at the end, oh, but he flies a little bit, but not really. Not to the level the Enchantress does. If this is going to turn into an aerial battle, Enchantress can fly rings around him. And the other thing to mention is he needs you to say his name 5 times in order to appear, which means that if, potentially, if he was battlefield removed, unless you say his name five times, he's not coming back in 2 minutes. I agree with your points.
I'm not sure where you're going with this, but that's okay, because it doesn't matter. We need to see where the judge's mind is at. So, Robert Clark Chan, you've heard one point from both Ray and myself. Where's your head at so far with this battle?
I mean, you've got a comic book hero, villain, character with 60-ish years of history, and that's always going to be an uphill battle because they've been there so long. They've had to show up and do so many different things that, you know, over the course of their history. They've done some wild stuff, surely. And also, you have someone who's basically a superhero whose job it is to fight in the comic books all the time versus Candyman, who just comes in and, like, kills human beings. So I feel like this is not where it's going to be. The battle is not going to end up as a knockdown slugfest in the middle of Manhattan or whatever. But if it were, at this point, Enchantress is definitely winning. She's got a whole lot of, you know, like a physical and magical feat. Candyman, yeah, he's powered at a human level. And so this is a very much a Homelander issue. Yeah, of course Homelander's super powerful in his world, but also you don't have a Goku in the boys' universe. So it's, you know, not that concerning. There's a lot of stuff here, but essentially Enchantress is winning currently, and I don't expect that she will be winning by the end of round two. So bring it. Let me see what you got.
I like that whole bring it. Very, yeah,
it's
very
almost
refined.
Like Robert Clark Chan has judged these shows before and knows that I pack a lot into point number one and then pull back slightly in point number two to Haymaker in point number three. It's almost like he's aware of how this show often goes.
I mean, the way I usually remember it is big point one, weak point two, you shoot yourself in the foot, point three. So we'll see how this goes.
How dare you?
Yeah, that tracks. All right, you heard it here, Legion of Audience. Stay tuned for point number two.
Spark something uncommon this holiday with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. It's fast turning into holiday season, and the last thing you want is to be the boring gift giver. Am I right? Everyone hates that person. And that's where the nice folks over at Uncommon Goods have got you covered. Look, if you look at their online shop, you'll find a trove of unique and fun things that are all perfect for all the loved ones in your life. If I was capable of love, I would spend all of my money on Uncommon Goods. They have a really fun advent calendar section, right? That's where I'm at right now. And that's where I found a cool science project a day advent calendar. Pretty neat. How about hot sauces? You like those? They got that. How about macaroons? Very delicious. Or even 12 days of whiskey cocktail cubes as an advent calendar. Let's get saucy this holiday season. I'm frankly on board with that. So support artists and small businesses this year and check out Uncommon Goods for high quality, unique gifts that are most of the time made here in the good old US of A. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/whowouldwin. That's uncommongoods.com/whowouldwin for 15% off. Now, don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we're back. Ray, what do you have? Hit us with your point number two.
Point number two, I want to talk about some of the things that she, the Enchantress, is a part of. First off, she has a crystal ball. And crystal balls in fiction, what does it mean? It means you see the future, which surely means that this adventure against the Candyman in her world would be foreseen. So this idea of no prior knowledge going into the battle, she's going to break that meta. She's going to break that fourth wall of the who would win fight, and she will have seen this battle before it even happens, and thus be able to prepare for it, whereas other characters perhaps could not. She also has magical manacles, which allows herself to capture other characters. She was able to put these handcuffs, magical handcuffs and foot cuffs, I don't know what you call them exactly, but she holds Vision in a lockdown state using these devices, which means Vision is a character who can phase through solid matter. But magically, he was kept like a prisoner in a cell. If this can work on Vision, can she not get up close to Candyman, who doesn't move particularly fast from the movies I saw, at least, and then snap some cuffs on him like she was RoboCop, and then he can't move? That's an incapacitation victory. But the thing I want to talk about here is Enchantress doesn't like fighting one-on-one. She doesn't like getting involved in the vulgarity of combat. This is a well-known thing about her character. If you touch her, She-Hulk backhand you across a room, sure. But she always has bodyguards. She always has henchmen around her. And often these characters are super powered in their own rights. Now, I understand that you're not allowed outside interference in a who would win battle. But summoners are allowed to summon, right? People who can manipulate and bring hordes of people on their side is allowed in a who would win show. So what are we talking about? In different battles in comics, she has brought with her an army of zombies multiple times. She's brought an army of frost trolls a few times. She has one time just got an entire building. She went into an office building and got the guys from finance in suits to hold a bunch of swords against the people that she was opposed with. It stands to reason that even with no prep time allowed, she would find a nearby group of men and get them to fight on her side. Now, they are obviously and clearly fodder much of the time against a character like Candyman. But while Candyman is working through the people that she has summoned or brought to herself to fight in her stead, that she's going to work on some sort of larger plan to remove Candyman from the battle and cast the spells that she needs to cast. Or she could just conjure a team of monsters like she's done in the comics. She's just conjured an army of monsters to fight with her. Or raise the dead. Her magic does that too. Raise an army of zombies to fight against Candyman and really mess with his mind, because he does not know of people who can do this. And I wanted to end this point by also talking about some of her big wins. Candyman's biggest wins are against regular scrub human beings who probably needed a butt kicking, but probably don't have the means to defend themselves against Candyman. Meanwhile, Enchantress has KO wins against Hela, against The Thing. She once energy blasted the Hulk and knocked him down for 2 minutes. And she's got a win against Doctor Strange. She punctured his shields. And she's incapacitated Captain America. At the end of the day, I don't think Candyman is on a level higher than any of those beings. Maybe Captain America, but everybody else on that list is more powerful than Candyman. And Enchantress has dropped them. That's my point number two.
All right, look, I didn't want to have to do this, but I'm going to have to do it anyway. Here's the thing about using magic, right? And you're saying the magic from Marvel Universe is going to overcome the magic of, you know, the Candyman universe. So back in 2004, really the last big Marvel DC crossover, really cool part where the Scarlet Witch is in the DC universe and she's like, I can't use the magic from the DC universe that well. The arguably the strongest magic user of chaos magic in Marvel couldn't do anything in the DC universe, or at least couldn't do it well. So when you cross over two universes, I think it's fair to say it's not like the Enchantress's magic will automatically overcome anything that's supernatural that Candyman can do. It doesn't limit her, but it doesn't automatically limit him either. So what he does will still exist. Now, in terms of magical monocles, all that kind of good stuff, remember, Candyman can teleport out of stuff. He can phase through walls, phase through things. Vision is scientifically based, and Candyman is supernatural. And I think if someone's got supernatural abilities to phase through things, that's going to be a game changer right here. So I don't think he's going to be caught by stuff. You know, and also on top of that, the Enchantress summoning things, that's really cool too. But you remember, Candyman disappears and reappears, teleports away and what have you. All of a sudden, there's all these, what, beings that are being summoned. Candyman's like, got it, I'm out, see ya. And it'll just like kind of stay invisible, phasing through walls and attacking strategically in ways that the Enchantress will not see coming. So summon all you want, because Candyman won't even just deal with it. He'll just figure out how to kind of stay hidden and go for the Enchantress directly. Now, with all that being said, let me get to my point number two. For my point number two, let's talk about some of the weapons and abilities of Candyman. Now, of course, Candyman has what's called, I don't know what you want to call it, control over bees, or bee control. He's got an army of bees living within him, ready to swarm on command. And the bees are like his signature, you know, spooky entourage, for lack of a better way of saying it. They're just absolutely nightmare fuel. And these aren't just any bees. They're part of him. They kind of symbolize the brutal injustice he faced and add this whole new level of terror to his presence. He controls them with some type of bee telepathy and calls on them whenever he wants to create panic, block escape routes, or just freak out anyone lucky enough to be nearby. When he unleashes the bees, what's really cool, they surround his target and then traps them in a whirlwind of stingers and relentless buzzing, and it makes it almost impossible to focus or escape. It's all part of his psychological game, and the bees create this absolute fear and chaos. And you might say, like, well, would the Enchantress be, you know, phased by bees if they were magical, supernatural bees? Yeah, she would. Now, on top of that, he's got that sharp hook. It's Candyman's main weapon, and his hook, you know, that replacement of his right hand. It's all bloody still and on a stump. It's crazy. And it's capable of using it to kill, butcher, mutilate, and slaughter his victims. And use it like a master. By the way, his hook is way more than just a sharp piece of metal. It's really his calling card, his signature move, if you will. Fun fact, his right hand was hacked off in a brutal, very violent act, and they just jammed that rusty, bloodstained hook in. It's just absolutely crazy. I love it. And now he used it to sell his scores in the goriest and scariest ways possible. And keep in mind, Candyman doesn't just go for flashy moves or fast slashes. He's all about the slow and deliberate strikes that make his attacks feel disturbingly personal. And it's not just a physical threat. I mean, just the sound of that hook scraping against walls or mirrors, that's enough to send chills down your spine. And it lets you know he's coming along before he actually appears. Like, this hook is just a psychological weapon of terror as much as it's a physical weapon. And this is a really cool thing, because this hook would actually be able to pierce the Enchantress's skin in some way, shape, or form. Is it going to go all the way through her inside places and rip her apart? Yeah, doubtful, but is it going to maim her a little bit? Is it going to create like horrible gashes and whatever? Yeah, it actually could. Now, he also has the power to invade people's minds, because as great as the Enchantress is, she's not actually impervious to having her mind invaded. It's happened before. And this is where she's going to be the most vulnerable and where Candyman can get in her skin. And he would do it with two of his powers. Well, first of all, he's got the power of mind invasion. And this is where he would start by slipping into the Enchantress's chaotic mind. He plants whispers and these unsettling thoughts that she just can't shake. And she may be used to haunting others and do this to other people. But Candyman's just got this different way of doing it. And it just, he has that Tony Todd resonating voice. How do you defend against that? You just don't. And that's the thing about the Enchantress. She's very much on the offense. But when things start coming at her, when things invade her mind, she's on the defensive right away, and this will freak her out. She's not used to being attacked in general, whether it's physical or, you know, telepathically, whatever you want to call it. Now, on top of that, there's this fact that Candyman has this power of intimidation, this fear that he can portray onto people. You know, Candyman may not even need to lift a finger, because he just projects these visions of his own terrifying acts with this hook, the bees, all that kind of stuff, the mayhem, the bees flying into her mouth, crawling through her eyes, all that kind of crazy stuff that happened to the victims of Candyman in his movies. There's no reason with the supernatural nature of what he does that that couldn't work to some degree on the Enchantress. Again, magic that she has in the Marvel Universe does not mean it overrides the magic of the universe that Candyman comes from. All of that is my point number two.
Okay, well, sure. That is a wild point. Look, Enchantress does. She pulls her magic from Asgard, and this is well known. Her magic is strongest when she is in Asgard, but it's not like it's not strong everywhere else. Seemingly, she can still get that magic from anywhere she finds herself to be, and she has magical sense about herself. This is somebody who could sense that there was unrest happening in Asgard while she was down on Earth. Just get vibes that way. And this is a character who has very strong mental defenses. I appreciate you trying to take this to a 4D level and have Candyman attack her in some sort of mental way, but she is one of very few characters who can defend herself from that type of attack in Marvel Comics extremely well. And the bees. I love the bees. The bees are what sets Candyman apart from other horror monsters. Anybody can slash you with a hook hand. It takes another type of character to open his mouth and have a host of bees come out. That said, Enchantress can create a force field and just push those bees away. This is not going to affect her in any way. But I did like what you said in point number one I want to get back to about his lost love and the fact that he can be manipulated as far as his past goes, because Enchantress has strong telepathy and can pull those types of memories out of someone's mind and then use illusions to use them against them. And that's something I want to explore in my point number three.
Interesting stuff. All right, look, we are at the turning point. Robert, you've had a moment to ponder 2 points for both Ray and myself. Who do you think is ahead, and what does the other side have to do to pull out the victory?
I mean, I fully expected Ray to shoot himself in the foot in the point three, but here we are in point two, and he's throwing out things that are not allowed by the rules. The crystal ball? Yeah. You're not changing the paradigm. She's not going to have prior knowledge. There's not going to be an army of zombies because there's no outside interference. The bees are very much a part of Candyman. An army of frost giants or dudes in suits? Office guys in suits? I mean, first off, not a compelling villain, at least in a punchy-kicky sort of way. I mean, they could ruin your credit rating, and I am terrified of that. Don't know that Enchantress would be. I feel like Asgardian real estate is always a solid investment. But essentially, there is nothing coming from Rey. James has sort of brought up the notion of Candyman getting into Enchantress's head, and that interests me. There are, if anything, he's going to be playing on a mental playground, because he's not gonna go toe to toe with her. The hook is not going to do a whole lot, I do not think. But if we're playing on a Freddy Krueger kind of ground, then yeah, she likes to manipulate people, and she's going to bring up that wife. He is just going to scare her with, yeah, oh sure, magical bees. That's pretty scary. That works for me. So I want to hear from James how is he going to be able to take her on the mental field. And from Ray, I think I'm going to need to hear the same thing. You say that she has strong mental defenses. Show me. Tell me how and when, because you told me that she beat the Thing and knocked down the Hulk. Okay. That doesn't count here, or it's probably not gonna count unless you make a real strong argument that they're going to be, arm wrestling in broad daylight. So
that's kind of a disturbing visual. Like, they're arm wrestling because, like, Enchantress would be arm wrestling like that bloody stumpy hook thing, which absolutely could be cool. I don't know.
I mean,
right? Who wouldn't want to see that? All right, listen, we got something from Robert Clark Chan. There's a reason why he's one of the most controversial yet very much so popular and often requested judges for the Who Would Win show. Let's see what's going to happen. Stay tuned for point number three. And we're back. Ray, it's now or never. Hit us with your point number three.
All right. Well, first up, we're going to talk about magic. And this is my biggest point. So buckle in, everybody. We're going to talk about energy magic. Chan, you act like blasting the Hulk or the Thing with an energy blast and knocking them out means nothing in a battle like this. Her energy blast hit with an extreme force. These are the big toughs of the Marvel Universe, and she one-shots them with energy blasts against a character in Candyman who would never in literal million years see an energy blast coming from anybody. He's used to fighting regular people and dominating them. You know what happens when you punch a bully in the mouth on the playground? They're surprised. because they don't know anybody can do that, and they tend to lose that fight. She also uses this energy magic to electrify the molecules of the air. She surrounded the Scarlet Witch with molecule electrified energy and took her down. She could also create force field shields in a form of a bubble around herself or other people. This is why I said the bees should not be a problem, because the second the bees start coming out of her mouth, she's going to create a bubble force field around herself and push them away. Now, her energy magic can also eliminate her personal energy. That prevents her from being detected and allows her to hit somebody from a form of stealth with an energy blast, which is how she's able to take out some of these larger beings. They don't see the shot coming. They get hit with extreme force before they have any chance to defend themselves. And that's going to work against Candyman as well, because she could also use illusions. She can make herself look like anyone. She can create an entire scene. At one point, she created a gas station where she found herself with her opponent, but that was not representative of where she actually was in real life. So she can mess with people's minds. And I absolutely believe a character like Candyman, she can put him in a place that he thinks he is, but he is not, forcing him or allowing him to take advantage of the scenery, but she's in control the entire time. Of course, this illusion also means that she can make herself invisible. Candyman can be invisible. Sure, she has magical sensing powers to know where she is, to know where he is. But if she turns invisible and prevents herself from being detected using energy magic, Candyman will be clueless. He will believe the illusions that she puts in front of him and literally swing at air while she prepares a spirit bomb like Goku would use to annihilate him. Now, she also has other spells as well. Paralyzing spells. She's used a spell to incapacitate both the Black Widow and Scarlet Witch, just literally held them in place. She also used a petrification spell on Sif, who is another Asgardian. I had to actually catch her from falling and smashing her head on the pavement because mid-motion, she just froze up and couldn't move anymore. But wait, there's more, as Ron Popeil used to say. Elemental powers. She has control over fire, water, air. She's an entire Aang the Avatar in one Marvel character. If the bees show up, she creates a hurricane wind and blows them away. She also can drain life from living creatures. And I would argue Candyman, despite his ethereal form, is a living creature. She can drain the life force of other people to enhance her personal power. As she sucks out your energy, her energy grows. She can also trap souls in magical objects, which she does carry around with her all the time. She could trap Candyman's soul, because I believe him to be a living creature, in a magical object, trapping him for potential eternity. But she's also a reality warper. She does matter manipulation. She once turned someone into a newt, but they did in fact get better. It was confirmed in the comics. She took Valkyrie, who is a strong character. She turned Valkyrie's legs into wood and then rooted that wood into the ground of the building they were in, holding her in place. She could also teleport enemies across dimensions. Probably a big deal in a battle against a powerful soul like Candyman, who could only reappear if you say his name 5 times, right? Across dimensions. She could create a portal to the moon. She could create a portal to Asgard very easily. What happens when she turns invisible, pretends she's dead, Candyman thinks he's won, she creates a portal to Asgard, uses her telepathy to create his loved ones that he misses so much, has that loved one jump into a portal to Asgard, he follows them, and she wins the battle through battlefield removal. Even if she followed him into the portal, her power is greater in Asgard than it is anywhere else. She wins 9 ways to Sunday. These are legitimate ways, one after another, that she defeats Candyman, and that's my point number
three. I got to push back on some of this, because a lot of what you're talking about, you know, is great for the Enchantress, but she uses all this against living beings, not against spirits or what have you, or ghostly apparitions. These are all living beings you're talking about, regardless if they're, you know, supernatural or super strong, whatever it is. This is not going to work against someone like Candyman. You electrified molecules, a force field. Again, he can teleport out of all that kind of stuff. And it's not just teleportation. He just like disappears and reappears somewhere else because that's what he wants to do. So yeah, trying to trap him is not going to work. Stealth and illusions, not going to stop the supernatural nature of Candyman for the same reasons. You know, messing with Candyman's mind, not going to work because that's what he does. Again, it might be a push, but that's what he does. He messes with the strong-willed people within his world. All the spells used against, again, you know, that you listed, they're all for living beings, as I mentioned before. And on top of that, you know, teleporting Candyman is not going to work because you're teleporting this being who's kind of made of this ethereal energy who can just disappear, literally just remove himself from the plane of existence he's on and just reappear when he wants to, where he wants to. The rules that the Enchantress goes by and plays by, they don't apply to Candyman. That's what gives him the advantage in this fight. Now, right, point number three, let's just break down the Enchantress's weaknesses because she's got a few. Again, Ray, we've already talked about this. She's not the most physical of villains. You know, she prefers to use magic and sorcery where she doesn't have to get her hands dirty. When it comes to close-in fighting, this is obvious, you know, hand-to-hand combat, all that kind of good stuff, she will gladly retreat and remove herself from the field of battle, just as she's done when facing the types of, like, Captain America or She-Hulk or what have you. In her own words, she says to She-Hulk, you know, two panels after that one you mentioned where you didn't mention what She-Hulk did, she says to She-Hulk, and I quote, "Physical contact with creatures such as you disgust me." That physicality is just something she doesn't want a part of and will remove herself from because she just doesn't want to be part of it. Speaking of Captain America, it seems the Enchantress isn't physically that tough or resilient in a fight. She's been knocked out cold with one shot by Captain America, where he was holding back and by his own words said, "I'm going to do just enough to take you out." And she's like, "Oh no, you wouldn't hit a, you know, me." And she's like, "Yeah, I don't want to, but I will." Boom. One hard shot with his shield where he just kind of shoves the shield into her face, knocks her down pretty hard, but it's one shot that's really controlled by Captain America. And I would argue that Candyman is at least as powerful, most likely much more powerful than Captain America. Look, she's been knocked out cold by Captain America. The lizard ripped her face apart with one slash and made her flee the battlefield. That was horrible. By the way, she's incredibly vain. Again, the lizard swiped her claws across her face one time and just ripped her face apart. She completely lost it, had to flee because her beauty was compromised. And in her own words, she said, "Restoring my beauty will cost me dearly in pain and sorcerer's power," which means it takes a lot out of her to heal herself. And she'll also make that the top priority in this battle if that were to happen, and therefore need to escape from Candyman. And look, Candyman likes to maim his opponents. We've seen this in the films. He doesn't just kill them. Stuff's getting ripped apart. Faces are getting torn apart, torn asunder. And as vain as she is, I don't think she'd die, but she'd look down and be like, "Oh no, I'm getting torn apart. That's my main thing I love. You're hurting that. I'm out of here. I need to heal up somewhere else." Now, on top of all that, she needs a plan. She needs time. She needs familiarity with her opponent to be truly devastating. See, if she knew about the Candyman, she might have a way to kind of deal with them, but she doesn't. This is someone who's the most effective when she has all the stuff that you don't get in a who would win battle. It's a random encounter. No prior knowledge. It's a neutral battlefield. No time to prepare. So if she had all those things, I'd say she'd win this fight 6 out of 10 times at least. But because she doesn't have any of these elements that make her truly dangerous, look, all of her magic's fantastic because she prepares for the fight ahead of time. She wants to know the battlefield. She puts everything in place to use to her advantage because that's what a great villain would do. And the Enchantress is a great villain. But just as we said with Dr. Doom and Black Adam, if Dr. Doom doesn't have that time to prepare, that prior knowledge, it's not a neutral location, yeah, he's in for a lot of trouble. He's getting messed up. He's going to retreat, figure out a plan, and come back to win the day. But in that first encounter, he's leaving. The Enchantress will do the exact same thing with Candyman. Look, the last thing, she's also insanely arrogant. She's really overconfident. She dismisses opponents she sees as inferior, which leaves her wide open to getting attacked physically. Again, that's exactly what happened with She-Hulk and Captain America. So the way I see Candyman winning this fight, psychological manipulation, where he gets into her head and makes her feel fear, breaks it down. And then, you know, Enchantress is overconfident. The bees come in. All of a sudden, the Enchantress's magic is not working nearly as effectively as she wants. She's going to get overwhelmed. That fear is going to creep into her head. And then the bees are going to come in. Does she have a way to deal with them? Yeah, I think she does, but it's going to take a while, and the bees are going to sting her, and all of a sudden her beauty gets compromised. As I said before, that causes battlefield removal. And finally, Candyman's going to physically hurt her. That's going to be a thing. He's going to start tearing into her with that hook. Look, if he had super, like just regular human strength with a hook, it's not going to be that effective, but I still think he could do something. But he is super strong, like really strong. And that hook with someone who's super strong is going to tear into her. If it comes anywhere near her face or any part of her body where she's insanely vain, she will self-impose battlefield removal as she's done so many times. Look, in the end, Chantress, she's absolutely devastating. If she has everything she needs to have previous knowledge, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, but she has none of that because it's a who would win encounter. This is why the Candyman wins his fight. That's my point number three.
Absolutely not. This is an outrageous set of points you put in front of us. First off, the lizard from the Spider-Man world, she drained the lizard's life force until he reverted back to human form. That was the answer. It wasn't scientific. It was magical. And she was able to pull the lizard. She's so ridiculous that Spider-Man's spidey senses go off just because she's standing like on the same block as him. She's so dangerous in a moment-to-moment, unforeseen way that Spider-Man does that, right? And she's got mental defenses for days. The idea that he would invade her brain and soul, she's put up mental defenses that repelled Charles Xavier, Professor X. If you can repel Professor X, you can repel Candyman at the end of the day. And she's created spells that were so powerful that Doctor Strange couldn't get through them, okay? She broke his shields. She's created hexes that he couldn't defeat. And she's read the mind of Carol Danvers' Captain Marvel. If you could read that person's mind, Candyman will not provide a problem in mental defense. The whole point here is that physically, I think she can beat him, but she doesn't want to. She wants to battlefield remove him or incapacitate him, either with a petrification spell or one of these portals that she will convince him to walk through. Why? Because she's fooled Heimdall. Heimdall's entire deal is that he knows where everybody is at all times. She fooled him with an illusion and personal cloaking to have him not know where she is and believe the illusion. And if you could believe Heimdall in Asgard, you can fool the Candyman. And you say out loud that he can reappear whenever he wants to, but the mythos is you gotta say his name 5 times for him to appear. So if she gets him to walk through a portal by chasing a loved one because she used telepathy against him to figure out that was his deal, she's going to battlefield remove him, and at the very minimum, 2 minutes is not when he's going to come back, because she probably knows his name through telepathy, but she ain't going to say it, and she ain't going to say it 5 times. I believe that's the clearest avenue to victory, and that's how she is going to win.
Interesting stuff, Robert. Look, you've heard 3 points from both Ray and myself. It's time for you to make a decision, but before we get to what Robert has to say, let's celebrate the Who Would Win Patron of the Week. Every week, we choose one of our amazing members from the Who Would Win Show's Patreon community and put them in a battle. Ray, which patron do we have today?
Today's patron of the week is somebody who's been with us. God bless him, he's trying. Cam Sully is with us today. Cam Sully, you're our patron of the week.
Ooh, wow. Okay, look, Cam Sully's got a reputation that definitely precedes him. I don't know how any one person can fight. You know what? No, it's not one person. Let's bring a team together. Cam Sully, you're fighting the unstoppable might of Voltron.
Oh, boy. Voltron is tough, right? When we've had the Voltron versus Godzilla, that was the very first episode of the current iteration, first episode, season 1 of the Who Would Win show. And we've had Voltron on the show since then, or was he a one and done after the first episode? I don't think he's been back. He has been back for a reason. And that reason is that Cam Sully defeated him. How did he do it? Cam Sully, a lot of people don't know this. Cam Sully can walk through walls. Cam Sully can materially shift himself through objects. And now that's very helpful against somebody like Voltron, who can form the mighty 5-lion creature. Gosh, 11 lions is enough to win the Super Bowl, but 5 lions is enough to win any battle on the Who Would Win show, let me tell you that. He is going to shift through and up through the maintenance shafts of all of the different lions of Voltron. He's going to get to the central chest, head, brain area, and he's going to put a sleeper hold on the person there, thus incapacitating Voltron from the inside for 2 minutes. Let's face it, the arms and leg lions, they're not getting up there in 2 minutes. It's too hard to navigate. I don't even know if they can get there at all. If you could take out the brain through using some like vision, walk through walls nonsense, you get the win. Cam Sully, you use your magical powers for good. Congratulations, you're a patron of the week.
I think that's the right call. I mean, if all you do is just go for the head of Voltron, I mean, maybe the Lions just, I don't know. I think Cam Sully did it yet again. Congratulations, Cam. Remember, you too can become a celebrated patron of the week. All you have to do is go to patreon.com/whowouldwinshow and sign up, and you may be featured in an upcoming episode of Who Would Win. Robert, it's time for your decision. Take us through your process, tell us the story, if you will, and reveal who you think wins this battle between Candyman and the Enchantress.
Okay, well, we got an avenging ghost here, and you know, you've got the basic deal between a horror franchise and a comic book franchise, because we don't even really have any MCU versions of the Enchantress to compare it to. You know, the comic books, there's a whole lot of punchy kicky in the middle of the street throwing cars and whatnot, and this is absolutely not going to be that fight. So a lot of what you got here with the Enchantress is just not going to be useful. I mean, she's going to outclass him in terms of telekinesis if they're both trying to throw a billboard or whatever, but that's not what this fight is. He is looking for his lost love, or, you know, something along those lines, very focused on that goal, and I don't think that the Enchantress is going to be able to divert him or dissuade him if he decides that she is the one who can bring his love back. Unfortunately, her primary weapon is seduction, and I believe Ray referred to it as love-omancy, which is the worst coined phrase I've ever heard in my entire life, and I've heard some bad ones. That being said, that's her wheelhouse. That's absolutely what she will use to take down your Captain Americas, your Spider-Mans, your Hulks, and what have you. But I think Candyman is too focused for that. I think he will see through that because it is his one thing, and as good as she is at it, he is looking for his true love as opposed to just some one-night stand with, based on every image I've seen drawn by boy artists, just enormous knockers. That's the main takeaway. Green and breasts. That is the entirety of Enchantress's thing, which is fine. It's fine. The Norse, I'm sure in 400 AD, all of the Norse depictions of this character, if she existed then, would be exactly that, just carved out of wood or stone, whatever. They're both good at illusions, I think, and would try and one-up each other. He is definitely going to try and get into her head, scare her, and she's not immune to that. Sure, she's an Asgardian god, but the thing about gods is that they have all sorts of human frailties, and she absolutely would be spooked by that sort of thing. I think that she would definitely try to lure him into some sort of portal to a nether dimension where we would have no power, but the illusions going back and forth, I think they're both really too good at it to be taken in by one or the other. She'll definitely try and put those manacles on him, or as James calls it, monocles. She's going to try and put one of those little one-eyed spectacle on him. And look, Tony Todd's going to look great in that, I assure you, but he's not going to be trapped by it. What he is going to do, though, is he will be able to take advantage of her vanity. She is, from the very little I know about her, like, she's going to be freaked out if he puts that big gory hook in her face. It's like, I won't stab you. I'm going to stab you. In the inimitable Tony Todd way that, you know, doesn't quite sound like that, but is much more, has a lot more gravitas. And she's going to be scared by that. He's going to try and unpretty her with the hook, with the bees. For God's sakes, if you're surrounded by bees, you're going to have your force fields and whatnot. But I think, again, this is not a fight on the street. It's going to be on a more mental plane. It's going to be in a place where they both have their powers equally. In general, being an Asgardian, she's going to be more powerful. But I think in terms of what a ghost can do, a vengeful ghost, I definitely think there's an in there to be able to take down even someone as powerful as the Enchantress. They both have different forms of invisibility to try and, you know, get around and sneak attack one or the other. I feel like that's going to be a wash because, again, she's really powerful, but he's a ghost. And that's what ghosts do. That's all they do 24/7 is sneak around and try and jump scare somebody. So they're going to be real even there. And it's going to come down, I think, at the very last. He can get into her head. He can shake her up really badly. She is more powerful and can fend off almost any attack that he has. But what is left is these little baubles that the Enchantress has to trap souls. And what is a ghost but just a real pissed off soul? I think at the end, she is going to lure him in, distract him just enough that she gets him and on his hook and all his little supernatural bees into a little vial that she's going to plug up and save for someday to throw in the face of Captain America as a petty vengeance for, you know, one-upping her. The winner this week, the Enchantress.
You know, I got to tell you, that was an interesting depiction of events right there. And I can't disagree. I think Candyman is going to be, I think a lot of people look at this and be like, oh, Candyman's going to get crushed immediately. I don't think so. I think you absolutely correctly depicted he's going to surprise her in a bunch of different ways. But we're talking about the Enchantress, someone who can go toe-to-toe with Thor with what she's doing and also figure out how to outsmart Loki at times and outdo Loki. There's going to be an endless amount of, I wouldn't call them tricks, but ways for her to deal with someone. And at the end of the day, Candyman, he's not arrogant, but man, is he ever hyper-focused on one thing? He could lose track of what the Enchantress could do with all of her abilities and magic and items and what have you. So I can't be upset with the decision this week. So well done, Robert Clark Chan. Race the Cadence, you got the win. Tell Legion of Audience how you feel.
I don't know that that's the exact way that she would claim victory here, but at the end of the day, that's one of the better judgments in Who Would Win show history. Let me just go ahead and say, Robert Clark Chan deals only in extremes. He has the ones that people say, what are you doing? And now with this new decision, he has one of the most thoughtful, provocative, definitely well-considered decisions. That's not how I would have seen it, but that's definitely a way that it very logically could come to. So I don't want to give Robert Clark Chan too much credit for correctly thinking all the way through this 4D game of chess that we have presented to him.
You are about to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory twice. Be careful what you say next, counselor.
Robert Clark Chan might be the greatest judge in Who Would Win history.
Better.
You know, I can't disagree with this. This is one of those rare times where both Ray and I are like, wow, that was really, really good. We can't really disagree with what the judge said. I just wish we had that same kind of energy in the Deathstroke versus Care Bears matchup of 2023, Robert Clark Chan.
James, you won that matchup. What are you talking about?
Did I, Ray? Did I? Because the Legion of Audience came back.
Hashtag nobody wins.
Nobody won that episode. I don't even know how that worked. Again,
hundreds of years from now, archaeologists are going to dig up that podcast and they'll be like, that was a perfect decision. These rubes hundreds of years ago just didn't understand the genius that was being worked on there. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with future generations knowing that I was very much in the right there.
I think in 100 years, Tea Party will mean like horse or unicorn or something completely. Who knows what it is? Listen, Robert Clark Chan, you came back on the show and brought the magic once again. please come back, do this over and over, leave the Tea Party debacle behind, and just do what you did today. Until that day happens, please tell the Legion of Audience where they can find you online.
I'm off a lot of these social media sites, your X's and your Zangas. I'm no longer on Zanga. I'm no longer on MySpace.
True Social?
I think I'm on Blue Sky. I don't recall. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Threads. Go ahead and find me there at 999 RPMs. There's a delightful podcast called Knowing is Half the Podcast. You should give a listen to it. Pretty fun. Also, AE Doubleback, if you're into wrestling, AEW specifically, check that out.
Very cool. Ray Cicadas, congratulations again on getting a very well-deserved win. Tell the Legion of Audience where they can find you.
I'm confused and overjoyed at the same time in that I felt good coming into this matchup. I felt this was a 75-25. I like to put percentages walking into the match after I do my research and counter research as to how I think it's going to go. And I felt confident until I saw that Robert Clark Chan was the judge. And we, in many times, nearly dare Robert Clark Chan to go against a slam dunk matchup with perfectly executed points. And what I have learned on the Who Would Win show is don't do that. Don't challenge Robert Clark Chan to be a Naismith, because Robert Clark Chan is a natural Naismith. If you tell him the sky is blue, definitively, he will find any possible reason to convince you, or at least himself, that the sky is red.
I mean, the atmosphere diffracts light, so technically it's blue. It's simply how we perceive. You know what? That's neither here nor there.
Yeah. Thank you for making my point, Robert Clark the Chan. The point I'm trying to make through all of this is, of course, I'm great. I navigated a nearly impossible situation where I had a win in the bag once I researched it, and all I had to do was not convince our very aggressive judge to not go against me. And you might think that is deeply difficult for me on the Who Would Win show, and you might have evidence to support that theory. But today is my day. Today is a day of victory. You can find me also on Threads, the only social media site, at Almighty Ray 316, let's live stream Lions games together. We are 8-1 as we record this. The greatest football team in NFL history. Are we going to beat the Jaguars on Sunday? I think we are. I have no evidence to support it aside from everything you see before you. Let's talk football on Sunday on Threads. Let's make it a bigger thing.
That, like, they're better than the 72 Dolphins?
By leaps and bounds.
Okay, gotcha. All right, you can find me on X, a.k.a. Twitter, a.k.a. Robert Clark Chan's and Ray Cicadas' favorite social media platform. You can also find me on Instagram and Facebook by typing in at James Gaffney. Remember to join the official Who Would Win Facebook group to make a suggestion for a matchup for the show and to be part of our growing community. You can also find us on Instagram and Threads, oddly enough, and TikTok at Who Would Win Show. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever else you go for your podcasts. On behalf of myself, Ray Cicadas, and the rest of the amazing Who Would Win production team, thank you once again for checking out another episode of Who Would Win. We'll see you next time.
Crying when Optimus Prime died.
Or the days when every series had a ham-fisted anti-drug episode.
Or when you wrote fan fiction about how the Animaniac were so hot in that water tower so they took off all their clothes and they started...
No!
No, different podcast.
This one is Knowing is Half the Podcast, a show devoted to the best and worst animated memories of your childhood.
Every week we recap a cartoon from the past to see if they're as good as you remember.
They're not.
What are you talking about? They're great!
You're both wrong. None of them get good until they're in a water tower.
No!
And Knowing is Half the Podcast.
Hey gang, I hope you enjoyed this episode and love listening to the show as much as we enjoyed making it. Quick reminder that you can support us by going to patreon.com/whowouldwinshow right now. Okay, gotta prepare for next week's episode. Hope the rest of your day is full of wins.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.